Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here, we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, a University of Georgia graduate was killed in a shooting yesterday on the campus of Old Dominion University. A new data center project takes shape in southwest Georgia, and we'll take a look at what we know and what we don't know about planned ICE detention facilities.
The Trump administration and DHS have taken a remarkable amount of effort to pull off a strategy in the dark of night.
Today is Friday, March 13th. I'm Peter Biello, and this is Georgia Today. An ROTC instructor killed in a shooting at Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia, has been identified as a University of Georgia graduate, Lieutenant Colonel Brandon Shaw. He was teaching an ROTC course yesterday when a gunman opened fire inside his classroom. Shaw died, and two other university members were injured in the attack. Shaw received his master's in business administration from UGA's Terry College of Business. The shooter was a former Army National Guardsman who was convicted of giving material support to ISIS. He was taken down by other ROTC students and did not survive. A panel of state senators today grilled the former special prosecutor at the Center of Misconduct Allegations against Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis in Georgia's 2020 election interference case. Attorney Nathan Wade testified before the Republican-led committee. He told senators that he didn't violate any rule of professional responsibility in the case involving President Trump. He also defended his legal fees, comparing them to those charged by Trump's lawyers.
They represented these people for a period of months. I represented the citizens of the state of Georgia for almost 3 years. And the numbers pale in comparison to what they're asking for.
The committee previously agreed not to ask him about the romantic relationship he had with Willis. That relationship led to her removal from the case, which another prosecutor eventually dismissed. Georgia's data center boom continues with a large new project in southwest Georgia. Data center developer QTS plans to build a 12 million square foot complex in Early County. That's according to an application submitted to state officials on Tuesday. If fully built, it would be one of the state's largest data centers. It also would prop up the local tax base in a county that recently lost its largest employer. Georgia Pacific closed a paper mill there last summer. The QTS application leaves blank all questions about the data center's energy and water needs. Nationwide data on gun-related deaths among young people shows a slight decline from previous years, but as GPB's Sophie Gratis reports, gun deaths in the South continue to be an outlier.
Recent data published by KFF Health News points to a rate of firearm deaths among U.S. children of 3 out of 100,000. In 2024, that was about 2,200 kids. That's slightly less than the previous 2 years, but still higher than pre-pandemic levels. In the South, the rate of kids whose death involved a gun from 2020 to 2024 is almost double the national average in some states. Georgia ranks among the top 10 for states with the highest increase in firearm deaths over that time frame. Assault accounted for the majority of gun deaths in the U.S., compared to suicide and accidental shootings, with some disparities. In Georgia, Black youth are over 4 times more likely to die from assault than white youth. For GPB News, I'm Sophie Gratis.
Georgia nurses, social workers, and therapists who lost their license because of substance use disorder will get a chance to continue their careers. State senators gave final passage yesterday to a bill aimed at helping medical professionals re-enter their fields after rehabilitation and with monitoring. Rome Republican Chuck Hufstetler spoke before the bill passed in a near-unanimous vote.
We want to extend this to our nurses and make sure that we have an opportunity for them to continue their careers if they've made a mistake one time, and it really encourages people not to hide their problems, but to bring them forward because they know there's a pathway other than just losing their license.
The bill now heads to Governor Brian Kemp for his signature. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has purchased nearly a dozen large warehouses across the country in recent years with the intent to house people the agency arrests. Two of those are in Georgia, in Social Circle and Oakwood. Combined, these Georgia warehouses could hold as many as 10,000 people. Facilities in use now elsewhere in the country may provide a preview of what's to come in Georgia. Douglas McMillan has been reporting on these warehouses for the Washington Post, and he's with me now. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
So people here wonder exactly how people will live in something like a warehouse where there are no interior walls or privacy. This model is not in use yet, but something similar a kind of tent city was in use in El Paso at a place called Camp East Montana. Could you tell us a little bit about what the living conditions for detainees were like there?
Yeah, so this is the largest ICE detention facility in the country. It was built in the span of a few weeks on what was essentially an empty patch of desert near the Mexican border in El Paso, Texas. It's a very sophisticated tent. It's a building that has soft sides.
Soft sides, like made out of cloth? What are they actually made out of?
They're made out of like a thick plastic material. And each tent is about two football fields long. And there are about three or four housing tents. People live inside pods within the tents that fit about 70 people. But each pod doesn't have any of its own roof. So all of the pods are under kind of one big roof. So one of the complaints that we've heard is that they're very loud. All day and night long, the lights are always on, and you always are hearing the shouting and the talking and the screaming and the crying. And, you know, human life is filling this tent, and the sounds are filling this tent all day and night.
So the federal government's trying to get away from that model. So what may appear in places like Social Circle in Georgia is something with stronger, more stable walls, perhaps, and continuous ceilings, and something resembling a prison inside a warehouse.
Yeah, we don't know what to expect. We haven't seen any final detailed drawings on how they're going to retrofit these. But yeah, right now these buildings are essentially vacant shells of a building. It's, you know, essentially four walls, a ceiling on a slab of concrete. And within that, they're going to bring contractors in to retrofit these things into detention centers. They're going to add housing units. They're planning to add kitchens, dining areas, medical tents, law libraries, recreation areas, security perimeters, all of the things that the federal standards dictate detention centers must have. They're going to have to kind of build from scratch.
The concept is between 8 and 10,000 people could be in a single warehouse, and that raises some concerns about infectious disease. What has been the experience with infectious disease in the El Paso Center?
Yeah, there have been a number of issues with that. Most recently, there was a measles outbreak in the El Paso Center. And what we know is that that has spread. It was initially a couple cases, and I think they got up to 14 cases of measles in this facility. We also know there have been tuberculosis cases there. One of the federal standards that requires prevention and treatment of infectious diseases in these ICE detention centers is they're supposed to have a negative pressure room where they're supposed to be able to quarantine people with TB. We do not know if they have such a room at the El Paso Detention Center. Experts I've talked to said that it might be hard to have a negative pressure space in a building that's not actually a building, that's a tent. So that, you know, that could be an issue there. We haven't confirmed whether or not they have that.
In Social Circle here in Georgia, leaders say they're just not being listened to by DHS. In your reporting, has that been the experience of other communities like this?
Yeah, so this plan has been rolled out with an extraordinary amount of secrecy. And, you know, we wrote the first story on Christmas Eve. We published an internal document that showed the first draft list of the city, the 23 cities where they were expecting to buy these warehouses and turn them into detention centers. When we published that report, we started hearing from people in a lot of these places that almost all of them had said that they had no contact whatsoever with federal authorities. And this includes town leaders, local leaders, members of Congress, governors. So really, the Trump administration and DHS have taken a remarkable amount of efforts to pull off a strategy in the dark of night. You know, obviously there has been now a lot of scrutiny and attention. Communities have come out in full-throated protest of these plans. We've seen a lot of elected leaders come out, write to DHS, write to Congress, and try to take a stand and get involved in this. But again, DHS has moved with kind of this MO that they're going to go ahead with these plans without really meaningfully engaging with the communities where they're buying these warehouses.
One of the concerns people in Social Circle had was water capacity. Will there be enough water in the town, or the city rather, to support a facility that's going to hold thousands of new people? In other places, has there been a similar concern about water servicing a large DHS facility? And how has the federal government proposed to maybe address that?
It's one of the most common concerns. These warehouse projects are mostly taking place in small towns that are about an hour or so, 45 minutes an hour outside of the major cities. And they are in small towns that sit on infrastructure that was not built to support thousands of detainees. In Social Circle, it's, you know, there's 4,000 residents and they have infrastructure, water, sewer that are built to support a town of 4,000 people. The building that's coming in Social Circle, the facility that's proposed for Social Circle, is meant to house up to 8,500 people, is my understanding. So the water and sewer is not built to support that. So what is the solution? The government has not been very forthcoming on that. There has been talk, I have heard increasing talk, that in some facilities that they will have to truck in water. There is a precedent for this. I believe that this is happening at the Alligator Alcatraz facility in the Florida Everglades, that they actually, because they do not have a sophisticated water infrastructure that can support the capacity of that facility, it's about 3,000 people there, I think, that they have been trucking in water to support that facility. Can you truck in enough water to support 8,000 people? I don't know what that looks like. I don't know the expense of that. You know, one possibility here is just like this is going to be a lot more expensive than the government ever had put forward or imagined or predicted or forecasted. I think that the government has this, the administration has this mentality of we're going to make this plan work quickly and however we have to make it work, and we're going to throw a lot of money at it. They've hired contractors who they think can help pull that off. But I think that at some point you might hit kind of a wall with some of these plans. If there's not enough water, there's not enough water. So I think that's a really, really valid concern, and we're hearing that, across the country, not just in Social Circle.
Douglas McMillan is a reporter for The Washington Post. Thank you so much for sharing your insight with us.
Anytime, my pleasure.
Officials say an Army sergeant accused of shooting 5 people at a Georgia base last summer is seeking to plead guilty to attempted murder and other charges in a military court. Authorities say 28-year-old Cornelius Radford shot at members of his supply unit at Fort Stewart in August. Gunfire injured 4 soldiers and a civilian worker, who was Radford's romantic partner, before bystanders disarmed and restrained him. That's according to prosecutors. Army prosecutors said yesterday that Radford's defense attorneys announced last week that Radford wants to plead guilty to 6 criminal counts out of the 13 he now faces. A military judge scheduled a March 31st hearing to decide whether to accept Radford's plea. Army prosecutors say they haven't negotiated a plea deal with Radford, meaning he would still face a possible life prison sentence if a military judge accepts his guilty plea. Officials in Atlanta provided more details yesterday on how residents and visitors will move safely and smoothly around the city when an estimated 500,000 people come for the World Cup. The world's largest sporting event and its 8 games in Atlanta are now less than 100 days away. GPB's Amanda Andrews reports.
During the World Cup, Atlanta will implement a month-long traffic management plan. The partnership with the Georgia Department of Transportation and MARTA includes traffic signal management and officers directing drivers on the ground. MARTA will also operate more trains to keep wait times down. Interim CEO Jonathan Hunt said they also have a backup plan.
Additionally, we're going to be staging well over 24 buses throughout the region. In case there's a rail event, we're able to get folks out of the train station on a bus and on their way very, very quickly.
MARTA will also introduce limited-run commemorative World Cup cards at station ticket machines. For GPB News, I'm Amanda Andrews.
A new line of wall ovens will roll off the assembly line at GE Appliances Roper Corporation facility in northwest Georgia's Walker County in July. The new product is part of an $18 million investment in its plant in Lafayette. The company said it added nearly 200 employees there over the past year. If a child needs surgery, games and guidance can help calm them down. The same goes for parents and doctors. That's the idea behind a newly launched app developed by a former Georgia doctor. GPB's Ellen Eldridge has more.
The Pre-Op App Kids platform goes beyond reminders and parent communication. This tool uses interactive game-based experiences that engage a child's breathing and attention. Dr. Lauren Welsh is the pediatric anesthesiologist who developed the patent-pending app.
Gentle reminders for parents, preoperatively to make the experience less stressful, and also games and stories available to introduce kids into what's going to happen that day in a familiar and fun way so that their fears are alleviated.
Welsh says longer term, the platform creates more opportunities to improve communication between families and their care teams. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
The movie industry is gearing up for the Oscars this weekend, and several nominated films have ties to Georgia. GPB's Christy York Wooten speaks with Atlanta movie expert and Trillith resident Stephen Brown to find out more.
The 98th Academy Awards are Sunday night, and we have Stephen Brown here with us to talk about Georgia movie connections and to make some predictions about who might take home Oscars this year. I want to jump right in for the Best Picture nominees. What are your thoughts on some of the top contenders this year?
So there might be one or two that are lucky to be on the list, but it's definitely a good list of movies. And I think two have just simply emerged as the absolute nipping at their heels competitors. That is Sinners and One Battle After Another. They're both Warner Brothers films, so you have a movie studio rooting for both of its big films. And you've got auteur directors in both cases, in Paul Thomas Anderson and Ryan Coogler, who wrote and directed their films. And I think both are going to be considered watershed moments in cinema. And so it's one of those where it's down to the wire about which one could possibly win.
That's true. And there's some on the list that I want to mention because they were so good. And two of my favorites were Hamnet and Sentiment of Value, kind of from a production and writing and aesthetic perspective, totally different than Sinners or One Battle After Another.
And Christy, I can imagine you would like those two as well, because they definitely use the notion of literature and the notion of art to bring families together. And in the case of Shakespeare and his partner, played by Best Actress lead Jessie Buckley, are facing a domestic crisis and looking for ways to ease the pain through art. And in Sentimental Value, Stellan Sarsgaard's character is trying to reconcile with his two daughters.
So let's jump into the acting categories now. Let's start with Best Actor. And we've got Timothée Chalamet, Leonardo DiCaprio, Ethan Hawke, Michael B. Jordan, and Wagner Moura.
That's correct. Some people say that this is one of the most stacked Best Actor lineups in recent years, and I have to agree.
Right.
But I do think this is a battle between Timothée Chalamet and Marty Supreme and Michael B. Jordan in Sinners, who's been kind of a late-breaking emergent candidate.
So let's move on to actresses.
Well, I'll start with just telling you that Kate Hudson in Song Sung Blue is wonderful in the role. She is a beloved Hollywood character, and she does the political circuit really well. She throws parties and makes a lot of friends. And we loved her, of course, years ago in Almost Famous. So there's a full circle moment of being in something else that is music related. Rose Byrne, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You is the name of the movie. And it's a story about the struggles of motherhood told in a really interesting way. She's won a lot of critics awards. She's probably the only thing as a distant second, but Jessie Buckley in Hamnet is almost as sure a bet as something this year for playing love interest or wife, I suspect, of Shakespeare, and being able to go through a variety of phases of her life during that.
And a variety of emotions.
A lot of emotion there.
Be ready. If you haven't seen Hamnet, check it out. But it is a variety of emotions, and she captures them all. All right, I want to move on. You mentioned Teyana Taylor, actress in a supporting role, and she's a part-time Atlanta resident, so definitely a little bit of a Georgia connection there. And there's a couple of other Georgia connections this year.
We love it when we have a part-time resident that is up for the Oscars in Teyana Taylor. We have one of our Best Picture movies is set in our area and actually was filmed here, and that one is Begonia. Weapons also did a lot of filming here in town. You'll hear a lot about Come See Me in the Good Light in the documentary feature film and in documentary short film, The Devil is Busy.
And you'll be watching from Trillith.
That is correct. We'll be watching from a viewing party in the new movie theater in Trillith.
We'll be ready to watch the Academy Awards on Sunday night. Stephen Brown, thank you again.
Thank you, Christy.
Spring temperatures are back this weekend all across the state, and there's plenty for you to get out and do. First, there are a lot of St. Patrick's Day celebrations, parades, festivals, and concerts happening. You can find some of those in Braselton, Flowery Branch, Cumming, and Dublin. There's the Valdosta Lounge Azalea Festival, the Taste of Suwannee, and the first annual Sumter County Barbecue Festival. The 2026 Rattlesnake and Wildlife Festival is in Claxton, the Forsythia Festival is in Forsyth, and the Mountaintop Jeep Summit is in Clarksville. Finally, the North Georgia Ag Expo is happening in Ellijay, and the Scottish Heritage Days 250th edition being held in Darien. Please note that this is an incomplete list. If you know of a festival that we missed, reach out to us by email. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. All right, that's going to wrap up a busy week of news, but thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, we're going to be back with you on Monday with all the latest Georgia headlines. You don't want to miss a thing, so subscribe to this podcast now, and we will be there in your feed waiting for you on Monday afternoon. Remember, too, you can check gpb.org/news for updates to the stories you heard today. And we're always posting new headlines there, so check out gpb.org/news. Your feedback and, of course, your festival recommendations are welcome at georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening. We will see you tomorrow.